The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, thank you once again for tuning in to this, the TWBC podcast. And my name is Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have the pleasure of your company. And joining me here once again to give us his perspective on what's just happened with the latest pro event is none other than Freddie Winter. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing okay. You're still prepared to talk after 12 solid hours of high-level slalom skiing that you've had to commentate. So congratulations, Tony. I know that the water ski world is very grateful for everything that you do, but I'm in awe of your ability to continue speaking.
No worries at all. You know, I mean, it just goes along with the territory, as they say. So anyway, okay. When I last talked to you, we were in the midst of the men's jump final at the King of Darkness. Obviously, I knew that you had to get away. You wanted to get some beauty rest for the action that was that came and went here at the Swiss Pro Slalom. So let's start off with that. Your take on what happened in the jump final and just the machine that is Freddy Krueger.
I saw on Instagram somewhere that he turned 48 this week. I mean, what an animal. We talked the other day about when Freddy would stop. When he stops being competitive, and there's no one that's... You know, Ryan Dodd would obviously be the guy that would say that he's you know, competitive, can beat him, all that sort of stuff. But there's no one else that can say with any certainty that they can really do it. So, I mean, Freddie's an animal. 226 feet at night. It's, I think, 68.8. I mean, it's just amazing. I couldn't be a bigger fan of Freddie. He is just one of the best people around in water skiing.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you there more. You know, and I mean, the young guns were pushing him hard towards the end. I mean, Joel Poland was the last person out on the water and came up a little bit, a little unstuck this time around. But there's plenty to look forward to with the future of men's jump going forward.
Yeah, Taylor, Jack, and Joel, the three really pushing. I think of all of those three, I think really only Joel has beaten Freddie more than once. Jack won the Malibu Open a couple of years ago, but you know, Joel's beat Freddie a couple of times last year. But yeah, I mean, it's bright, but at the same time, I mean, we've got a 48-year-old guy who's just destroying. I mean, every time he goes out, you think he's going to win. It's just incredible, and I'm so happy to see it.
Do you think that's a little demoralizing on the competition's part, seeing someone who's growing grey hair just absolutely whooping them at the last?
Not really, because I think that, you know, everyone's grown up with him being just a legend. So, I mean, you know, it's like I grew up seeing Will Asher as one of the best skiers in the world, you know, when he was 22 years old, and I still see that now 18 years later. So it's... You know, he's still one of the biggest competitors there are out there. So it's, you know, in the same way, I mean, you can never count out Freddy Krueger. I think, honestly, there'll be a little part of all the guys that try and beat Freddy that are a bit sad, you know, if and probably when, but if he slows down at some point.
Okie dokie. All right. So that we put a bow there on the King of Darkness. Great event, Steve Garcia. Fantastic job of organizing that. You know, I mean, him and I definitely have some differences of opinion. You know, on certain things that go on with tournaments, the King of Darkness especially. But can't fault him for coming through in the clutch with another top class event in Horizon West.
I'm not getting involved in these politics here. I'm just going to say this: Steve and Dana did an excellent job. It was a 10 out of 10 quality event. And I mean, like, you know, I think I mentioned it yesterday, but to build an event for the public and to be able to run a fantastic event for the skiers too, that's special. It doesn't always happen. There was, you know, great drivers, great boats, great judging. I mean, it was proper. It was really proper, and I loved it.
All right, then. So we wind the clock forward a few hours. Swiss Pro Slalom, the crew from TWBC tore down their setup and moved it a few miles towards Clermont. I'm not too sure when they completed the setup early in the morning, but just 7:45 in the morning, getting ready to do some slalom skiing. And, you know, I mean, another top-class event here at Swiss Pro, the ninth edition of the event, you know, and just can't help but be impressed.
It's just, you know, I don't want to sound like an idiot who just says everything is great, but I mean, like, what a weekend. I mean, for Christ, like, the Swiss Pro is always good. I feel like, I don't know why, I feel like this year was especially good. I think probably because I had a pretty good day. I didn't win it, obviously, but, like, it just... Everything just felt totally dialed. Like, we had a, you know, it just felt good. Like, I really enjoyed skiing today. It's always good. It was a little windy, but typical late Caroline fashion, didn't really feel like the wind was particularly affecting us. And I had some, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, anyone that watched my class would have seen how good it was. I mean, see those drones, the drone shots going down the lake, as much as I kind of get annoyed when they're in my face in front of me, like taking my eye off the buoys I'm supposed to be looking at. It really is an excellent event. It's an event that we just turn up at Swiss kind of knowing, you know, us as athletes knowing that it's not really, there's nothing going to go wrong particularly. It's such a sort of safe place and everything's going to be dialed to the max. The buoy is going to be right level. The rope's going to be right length. The driver's going to be good. The boat's going to be good. And it's just about us going out competing and trying to beat the other guys that we compete against the rest of the year. But you know, whereas the rest of the year, there's always like a little variable in there. It seems to be at Swiss that there's no weird variables. Everything's legit, and it's fantastic.
Okay, the one major change with the Swiss Pro Slalom, at least so far as the men's is concerned, was the introduction of Scott Greenwood as the driver this time around. You know, and first time he's driven at Swiss Pro, to the best of my knowledge, and it seems like he's driven there for donkey's years. You know, he seemed to have a really, really good feel for the setup and also for the skiers that he towed towards great success in this tournament.
Yeah, a chief driver at Worlds. He is a guy I didn't really know was driving until about a year ago. He was driving, he drove like the LCQs at for the Masters, and you know, just feels good. The guy knows how to drive a boat. He puts points in the right direction. Feels like he's giving you a little bit, but I mean, his numbers say that he's not. That's his talent. I could drive, you know, 50,000 hours of a boat, and I'd never be able to drive as well as he does. So it's great. And you know, I think the Swiss guys, they put in the guy that everyone really wanted. He did a bloody good job. So well done to him.
So great skiing, great driving. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you were among the top scorers out of the first round. You actually tied with Nate Smith with five at 41 off, and then second round was a little bit interesting to say the least, with some deep runs also into 41 off, but you ended up having to leave the dock a second to last out, and that was just red meat and gravy for the likes of Nate Smith, if we're being fair.
You have to explain to me what red meat and gravy means, but yeah, I mean, I was second to last out. I didn't run the 41 that I definitely should have run in round two, but you know what? Who cares? I mean, it's a score, and you know, I'm going to judge my career at the end on how many wins I get, to a lesser extent, how many podiums I get, not on how many 41s I run. And I mean, I've run 41 in prelims of pro tournaments and then not run it in the final, and then just been like, well, that was really stupid. So yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. But yeah, what I'm annoyed about is that I didn't capitalize in the final after a good enough start to probably get a little bit further down. And, you know, I'm in the middle of a slight, I would say, rebuilding process of my offside. I've been saying all weekend I need two more weeks. I would say that actually maybe I'm further along that path, given the scores I was able to get today, that I was, you know, I don't want to say surprised, but like, I haven't been running those scores that much in the last few weeks. So to turn three times in a row, and I mean, I think I was frustrated yesterday with, you know, falling round three at 10-5, and you know, my dear parents, they called me and they were, you know, very nice to me, and they said, well, you know, you must be disappointed. I said, yeah, but I am. Of course, I am. I'm frustrated, but that's not the skier I'm going to be in a month's time. I know I've actually got something quite slight to work on. I think that I've got a good ski. I just got to figure out myself, and I got a little couple technique things that I can work on. I think it's going to be very beneficial, and I think that through the summer I'll be in better shape.
All right, that sounds rather intriguing. We better keep an eye out for that. Now, among some of the other competitors that you watched before you went out onto the water, were there any that kind of stood out to you towards the beginning or the middle portion of the order, and you know, that made you stand up and take a look and take notice, so to speak?
I mean, well, firstly, Charlie Ross. I mean, what a guy. I was talking to him this week, and he's like, I just really want to make the finals in Swiss. I'm like, Charlie, going to make the finals in Swiss. You know, he's definitely in that top eight in the world right now. He's 17 years old, and he's crushing. He ran 3:41 in the final. Actually, he looked good enough to kind of, yeah, he's going to start turning that boy. And a really, really, I don't want to say nice kid, because that's like disrespectful, but he, you know, he's a really nice guy, and he's going to have a lot of success. So he's the one that stands out for me. And then Rob did really well, got around boy four in the first round. That set him up well, and got him on the podium. And you know, Dane, I always look at, he's a really good skier, guy that's improved a huge amount. And yeah, he didn't turn the three that I think he's very capable of turning. But I mean, you know, he's a guy that he finished last year very, very strong at Miami, which I struggled so badly there. I never felt in any way settled. And he did really well there. So yeah, I mean, those were the three guys. You know, of course, Will Asher. I mean, you always look at Will, and you always think that he's going to get a big score. And he probably was disappointed to get three times around. He's done that very much. He's always been kind of getting those fives and sixes at 41 in the last year. So it was a different situation for him. He ran 5 against me last night in the head to head, which was annoying for me. But you know, he's obviously, the guy moves into his 41st year, and he's still got it.
Indeed. You know, I asked you the question last night, how are you going to reset from slalom in the King of Darkness to the Swiss Pro? Now we're on the other side of that question. How do you think the reset went for you?
Yeah, it was good. I got home about 11:30 last night, which, you know, we had to obviously had to wait for the podium, which, you know, very grateful to the King of Darkness guys for putting on a podium. It was quite late, and I was like a little bit anxious to get home and sleep. Being, you know, living on the other side of town, to Swiss, having an hour's drive in the morning, lots of stuff, and living quite far away from Oslo, Hancock. But yeah, I slept till about 8:30, which was nice. I haven't been sleeping in that much, and yeah, just woke up, turned up, got to the lake, and I mean, it all went well. It all felt good. In contrast to some of the other tournaments, like, it just, you just kind of trust Swiss that it's going to be good. They have things dialed in there, and it was excellent. So yeah, always a pleasure to turn up at Swiss and ski.
Indeed, and seemed like the opening two round pretty much went to plan so far as you're concerned. But before we discuss what happened in the final a little bit, let's veer off a little bit into the realm of the women's competition. And I mean, what can you say about Regina Jaques? I mean, she's owned this tournament from the get go, and she continues to do the same here.
I'm very interested to see what happens next year, because she won, I think, nine
times.
She won nine. Well, she's obviously won nine at the Swiss, but she won Malibu Open 9 times in a row, and to lose it on the 10th when Whitney won, actually, the Malibu Open in 2021. So, yeah, I mean, if she can get 10 in a row, 10 in a row of any tournament is just, to win one pro tournament is hard. To win 10 in a row, to win 10 of them, it's insane. To win 10 in a row, it's unthinkable. 9 in a row. Yeah, no, she's incredible. And bit of a struggle yesterday, ran 5:39. She'd been very upset, 5:75. And Whitney is just crushing. She's running her 39 back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. She didn't get the start she wanted after Regina had got her 2:41. I think that was actually kind of in some ways telling, being incredibly respectful of Regina and the incredible skier that she is. But she was obviously she sort of threw the fist after running 2:10.25, which I think she probably knew was going to put her right in the fight. She hasn't been, you know, getting the sort of threes and fours since her knee was operated on a couple of years ago, which we were used to seeing her get. So I think I do honestly believe that she'll come back to it, but she threw the fist and then Whitney couldn't quite get it. I would like to point out Jeremy of TWC, exceptional videography, zooming in on Whitney's face the whole, like, as she sort of came into the water. I thought it was just shows why TWBC is just at the forefront of the sport to be able to get that level of emotion straight off the athlete's face by great camera work. It really got me quite excited.
Indeed, indeed. And among the other performers, I was especially pleased with how Ali Nicholson kind of recovered a little bit from a lackluster start with 4.5 on 11.25 meters and came through with a score of 2:10.75 meters to basically assert herself into the women's slalom final and kind of leapfrogging over an impressive performance by Neely Ross.
Yeah, Ali's great, and she's improving, which is really, really cool. And I mean, you know, she's working on joining that sort of next tier of you know, well, I'd say right now, Regina and Whitney are kind of in a class of their own. Jamie's coming back, and she will for sure be back there. She's had an off season in the snow, but you know, Ali's definitely that link between that kind of that big golden three that's been winning everything the last few years, and the next guys down. So. No, she's great, and she's lovely as a person. And I'm, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, like, talking about this is kind of always a bit awkward because I actually like all of them, and they're all good people. But I'm always cheering for Ali. And I think that, you know, it was a couple of years ago that she was always like right there, and then never kind of got it finished. Had a rough final, always kind of ended up in seventh or whatever. It's good to see. I mean, she's got back to back fourths, I think, and she'll be looking to, you know, bring that onto the podium going forward.
And indeed, she's got one or two tournaments in her immediate future, and she could get on the podium in the next major pro tournament coming up on the horizon. But before we discuss that so much, what about the final round in the men's competition? I mean, you are pretty much in almost a virtual head-to-head battle with Nate Smith towards the end, and as it turned out, you know. Nate Smith came through with 4:10.25 meters, and you were half a buoy behind. You know, but some exceptional competition all the way through, right towards the end, to round off the ninth edition of the Swiss Pro.
Frustratingly, I realized afterwards it's the second time this year in three events that I've lost to Nate by half a buoy because I couldn't hold on to some slack. So I need to work on my muscles. I mean, that was quite a lot of slack, I guess. But yeah, no, annoying. But you say it was, I think you mentioned it was sort of somewhat of a two-way battle, but it wasn't at all. I mean, everyone stacked up at three. I actually came to three in good shape, but I'm just not confident in that offside as I want to be and as I think I can be. I came into three and probably just safetied it just a little bit. That stopped my commitment through the back end of the turn to get over to four in better shape. And yeah, so that's where I kind of sort of almost made sure that I got that podium spot by getting the 4.3 and then went for the four. But you can't do that at 10.25 and run the pass, which I needed to do, really. Just have to be 100% committed. So that's where I need to be. You know, I would never even think about it on my onside. I've got as good of an onside, I think, as anyone has, really, in terms of being able to commit to it and know that I'm going to be fine. So I just need to get a bit closer to that on my offside. And I think, I've got the equipment. I've got, I feel physically fit, which I'm really happy about after strange in last year and whatever. But I just got to figure out my team. So the problem is all above the boots and potentially, you know, between the ears in terms of getting that muscle memory dialed. I hope to be able to get there.
Indeed, indeed, and you've got a little bit of time to spare now between now and your next major tournament as we kind of round off the reportage so far as the Swiss Pro Slalom is concerned. Okay, so where do we start with this one, eh? I mean, we've got the next two weekends are a qualification at competitions for the Masters, and then the Masters itself takes place the weekend afterwards. Now, you are not alone in terms of expressing your distaste of the whole system in qualifying for the Masters. I mean, you're pretty much on the outside looking in for the next few weeks. You can't ski in the qualifiers. You can't ski in the Masters for whatever reason that the incident happened last year. And you know, it's a shame. You know, you're gonna rest up for the next three weekends, but you'd rather be out in the water slicing and dicing with the world's best.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And I think that, you know, to be quite honest, with the season I had last year on the podium, every event apart from Miami, I'm not going to count the Masters in that because I should have had a chance in the final. And then three podiums out of three events already this year, I think I should be given the chance to go to the Masters. You know, I think probably it's okay to say that my ineligibility, I think, is I think I should be able to go and try and get into the Masters, let's say. But anyway, you know, it is what it is, and I will go and ski for myself and improve myself. And you know, it's an enforced absence from the tournaments that everyone else is doing, all my peers are doing, all the guys that I compete against every week are doing. I have no choice in that, but that's okay. There needs to be breaks in this season. It's a very long season. I'm certainly planning to use it to my advantage. And you know, I think that any tournament that doesn't have, the guy that was in it every year for the last 9 years, or whatever it is, or 8 years, and won it two of the last 3 years, and he's probably worse off for not having that person in.
Yeah, it'll definitely just like raise questions that really shouldn't have even be asked, you know, right from the get go, you know. So now you've got 3 weekends off, okay? Are you searching for another record tournament, or are you going to rest up and maybe enjoy your first of three Memorial Day weekend for the first time in how many years? Like 9 years since you've been going to the Masters.
Yeah, I think I first went in 2014 was my first Master. So yeah, I mean, it would have been my 10th in a row, sadly. But no, that's not true because we didn't do it in COVID. But yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have some time off am I gonna do record tournaments? No. I'm a professional water skier. Why would I go and pay money to go and do a record tournament in front of nobody, which doesn't help promote the sport, doesn't help me. As far as I'm concerned, record tournaments as a professional skier chasing scores, it's a loser's game. My aim is to win professional tournaments, and honestly, if I want to go get big scores to count for the amateur ranking list, the scores based ranking list that the International Federation puts together that is the seeding of worlds. I'm not interested in it. I want to be number one in the water ski pro tour rankings. So I want to be winning the big tournaments. And yes, I would have done the LCQs, but I would have done them because my peers are there, because the guys that I compete against. That's what I want to go and, you know, try and beat those guys. These are the people that I want to be beating. That's my aim in life, is to be above the rest of the field. My aim is not to run, you know, a big score with no one there. It's certainly not my aim. I'm going to wait for the next pro tournament, and that's the 38 pro am. And I'm happy. I mean, because today, it's like, you know, I always go back to the example of Dane Meckler. Dane Meckler ran 10.25 in a runoff at the World Championships, and he said to me afterwards, he's like, "Oh man, the show doesn't count." And I said to him, "My friend, that's what counts the most. you had the biggest audience of anyone in the world in your Rank 1025. That what is, does that mean more than someone, you know, having it in the school books, but in some dodgy tournament in who knows where, with God knows what level of driving and
where
know,
you're
God
always
going to
have questions.
Was. Yeah, well, no, I don't. I think that we're past the point that of tournaments sort of counting, you know, record tournaments counting for top level skiers, because, you know, hey, if you're a real skier, do it in front of the cameras, do it any one time. That's the time to do it. And if you can't do it there, then, you know, who cares?
Okay, for those of you that are listening to the podcast right now, we're actually doing this over a cell phone connection. Freddie had to jet from the Swiss resort, so I'm actually communicating with him right now on his cell phone as he's driving towards East Orlando. Should be home in about the next few minutes, but I just wanted to take advantage of the time while it's still fresh in the memory. So you did mention Lake 38 is going to be your next tournament, and then from there it's getting ready for the European stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. Lake 38, I mean, it's so great they're putting on a tournament. They've done it, I think, five times now. I've been every time, and just really grateful people are putting on events. We're very lucky that the number of events is growing. And yes, then Europe. And as much as, you know, I'm American-based, I am a European, continental European, and there are some wonderful events that happen over there. And happily, we have more and more American-based skiers coming over. You mentioned Ali Nicholson. She came over and won a couple last year and saw Jamie Bull there. I think Whitney's going to come and do at least a handful, which just is so great. Especially we didn't see huge women's fields there last year, and I think that, you know, the money is there, for them to kind of be able to afford to come over. And I mean, honestly, like, you know, with a smaller women's field, it's easier to make the money, because I mean, there's. But, you know, you can kind of, I guess, you know, just when you've got a smaller entry list there, there were some tournaments last year where there was only four or five people.
Yeah.
Well, you'd hope that people will turn up and fill those spots more and more. And that's what we need to grow the sport. The European stuff's going to be amazing. I'm especially looking forward to San Gervasio. My dear friend Matteo Lazzeri is going to put that on. And that's a great event. And then, of course, Caiaphas, which I think is one of the events I've enjoyed the most ever in my life last year. We turned up. George was talking a big game. He told me, he's like, Fred, it's going to be amazing. I'm like, yeah, okay, mate, I'm sure it'll be amazing. Well, it was really amazing, as you remember, Tony.
Yes.
I'm excited for that. He's promised me it's going to be even bigger this year. I'm like, well, okay. Good luck. But of course I don't doubt him, because he did such a good job last year of delivering.
Yes, indeed. And I definitely remember Caiaphas last season, and I'm certainly looking for it this time around. It'll be about the first or second weekend in July. And then, obviously, once the European stretch is over and done with, then come back to Europe. And then essentially, it's a waiting game for the likes of some of the other tournaments, the Mastercraft Pro, the Malibu Open, and all that kind of stuff. And then the World Championships in October, so a pretty full slate of tournaments coming up, and we'll keep an eye on what you do and also the others, and I'm sure that you won't hesitate in giving us your opinion and your take on the issues of the sport going forward there, Freddie.
No, certainly not. I'm incredibly honoured to be part of this sort of running tour series. I only hope the listeners aren't extremely sick of me after, I think, four of these, whatever it is, in the space of a week and a half. But I mean, I think everyone's going to get a well-earned rest from me.
They'll probably be more sick of me being the announcer for the TWBC broadcast right for the jump. No, but
certainly not. I disagree. I think you're a treasure of water skiing, Tony, and we need. We're very lucky to have have you and Vince and all the camera guys and. Even Connor, who likes to distract me with his stupid drone when I'm at 35 off and he's 5 feet from my head, even him.
Oh, yes. The lovable Connor Pawley. All right, then. Okay, and that brings to a conclusion this episode of On Tour with Freddie Winter. We'll catch up with him in a few weeks' time for in preparation or at Lake 38 for the next broadcast of TWBC, where we hope to be at Lake 38. My name's been Tony Lightfoot. He's been Freddie Winter. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.